This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by DigitalOcean. Simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code KNOWHOW in the billing section to get your $10 credit. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. Because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/KNOWHOW and enter the promo code KNOWHOW. Today on KNOWHOW,
cooking for geeks.
Know-how. It's the Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballasier.
I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next however many minutes it takes, we're going to show you some of the projects that we've been geeking out with so you can take them home and geek out on your own. Brian, I'm excited.
I'm excited too.
Why are you excited?
Because I see all this stuff sitting behind
that's
you.
That's not here. That's the fourth wall. Just stop.
I'm breaking the wall.
Yeah, you are.
Sorry.
No, but yes, you see that stuff because we're going to start a new series here on Know-How. We're going to be popping up every once in a while, cooking for geeks.
And the whole feeding ourselves.
Feeding ourselves. We like to be fed. So what could we do to combine our love of science, our love of technology, with the need to put stuff in our body so we don't die?
There's nothing about that I don't like.
I love every phrase and word in that sentence.
Exactly.
This is actually a serious thing because I was starting to think as we get closer to the summer months, it might be nice to have a series for maybe those people who are going to be going off to college. What could they do? What could they bring with them to get, you know, just a couple of touches of home, maybe some home style cooking, and perhaps we could bring in some hardcore science and engineering to give people an appreciation of what the culinary arts really mean.
Absolutely. Even maybe a little bit of food hacking.
Yeah.
Way to more efficiently make things.
Yes. This is also a really good excuse for me to get food tech.
I'm not going to argue with that.
Let's do it. The first one, actually, this is super, super easy, but it's important. Have you heard of the SodaStream?
I have heard of the SodaStream. That's where you have like a flavoring syrup, and you make your own soda, basically?
Yeah, exactly. And this is what it looks like. So this is the one that I bought for myself about a year and a half ago because I didn't want to be drinking soda, canned soda anymore.
Right.
But I did kind of like the fizz. So I thought, okay, well, can I take, not juices, because juices are just as bad.
Yeah.
But can I basically take water and then, like, cherry
just carbonate
something.
Carbonate some water.
Exactly. Yeah. And it actually works out quite well.
Cool.
The way that it works is you have this. This is sort of the carbonator. That's where you put your water. Just standard water.
Just regular tap
water. Tap water, or actually, in my case, filtered water. It screws into the machine like so. And there's a big canister of carbon dioxide right in here.
So
there you go. And that's what's going to carbonate it. So all I have to do is press this a couple of times. You hear it bubbling. You see it there. And it's injecting enough CO2 into it to carbonate the water. That's all it takes.
Oh.
So, you know, when you have carbonated water, soda, on a large scale, it's just this, but they're doing it inside of a factory. And not
okay.
On the stream.
That's pretty simple. Can you over-carbonate it?
No, this actually has a valve. It won't get there because this carbonation unit is almost depleted.
Oh, okay.
But if it starts to get up there, you hear it like pop, 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 and it's just the release valve letting all the excess CO2 out.
That's pretty cool.
And then when you're done, depressurize it.
Ooh.
Yeah, right? I like that part. that tells me refreshment is on the way.
Yeah, it sounded like an airlock.
And it's, again, this is kind of depleted, so you don't see a whole lot of bubbling.
Okay.
But this is when you would add the flavor, and you got yourself a nice little fizzy drink.
Okay.
One issue. I like this. A lot of people like their soda streams. A lot of people swear by their soda streams.
Right.
But the carbonation unit, the little CO2 canister, it's crazy expensive.
Oh, so that's how they get you. It's like the ink and printers.
And precisely. I mean, the whole thing was like $50, and it came with one of these free. But then,
The first one's always free.
A 60-liter carbonator. So that should be enough to carbonate 60 liters of water, even though it totally doesn't. Not even close. That's going to go for about $37.
So more than half the cost of what the whole thing was anyway.
Yeah.
Dang. Yeah.
Which, you know, if all you're looking is for an occasional spritz, that's not too bad. You might be buying, you know, three of these a year, and you might consider that okay. But if you're like me and you are a heavy consumer
of carbonated beverages, yes,
That adds up really quickly. I mean, at one point, I was emptying one of these every week.
Dang. Well, and this is just CO2, right? It's pressurized CO2, so there's got to be a cheaper way to get a hold of it, right?
Yes, and of course, no.
Oh, okay.
Because they do want you to buy it from them. So let me go ahead and take this unit out. Again, super simple. If you actually look at what comprises this unit, this whole unit is just a plastic housing for what is essentially a straw, a fitting for this, and a fitting for that bottle.
Right.
Right.
So, it looks pretty simple.
And a valve. So you push this and it activates the valve. So there's not a whole lot to that.
$5 worth of parts right there?
Maybe not even that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this part, because it's a pressure cylinder, it is a bit more expensive. And what they've done, if you go to the side view here, Alex, this thread is unique. You're not going to find that thread anywhere else.
Of course not.
And it's actually reversed from a lot of the threads that you're going to find. And they did that specifically so that you wouldn't be able to just take any CO2 canister and plug it in.
And you can't just take this somewhere and get it recharged?
No. I mean, they do. So when you buy new cylinders, you're supposed to send this one back or exchange it so that they can refill it. And it's friendlier to the earth, but it also means it's more profit for them.
Right.
I wasn't down on that. I mean, no. I just...
Why should you be?
No. I just didn't feel like doing that. I thought there should be a way for me to go ahead and use common CO2 cylinders to run my carbonator.
Like the kind you would find in an airsoft gun or something like that?
Oh, yeah. Maybe something like paintball? This. So this is for paintball. If you, go to the side view, this is a Gorilla Air paintball canister.
Looks tough.
It is tough. Now, if you go to the overhead, Alex, you'll notice that
it is shorter,
but this actually contains more CO2.
Oh.
It's a different kind of a cylinder. It you can actually pressurize it more, so I can contain more CO2 inside this cylinder than this thing does. So this says it can carbonate about 60 liters of water. This one probably actually does 60 liters of water.
Okay.
Now, here's the big thing. If I were to buy two of these, I could get them for about, $57.
Okay.
So I get a discount if I buy two.
Buy in bulk.
However, a refill of this will cost me about $5.
And then, so you buy the bottle, and you just keep it, and then get it refilled.
Just get it refilled. Any place that has a paintball range, they'll have a way to refill. And the place that I found in Las Vegas, which is not the cheapest by far, but it was only $5. In fact, there is a place down in San Jose that will refill them for about $2.50.
Nice.
Now, but look at this. Again, go to that side view camera. Look at the threading.
It looks different.
Not so the same.
Yeah.
So I cannot just take this bottle and screw it into the SodaStream. And again, that's by design.
Right.
Because they want you to buy theirs. But I'm not going to stand up for that.
No. Right. You'll find a way around that.
And the way around it...
Is there an adapter?
If you hold this, is this. So this is an adapter that I bought off of eBay. This thing cost me about, $13.99, okay?
Right.
All this does is it screws onto this. So this uses the standard thread for any paintball gun.
Right.
And now if you go to the side view,
it adapts to the same thread.
There we go.
Suck that, SodaStream.
Yeah, exactly. and the cool thing about this is I can take it on or off as I need to in order to get it refilled.
You can refresh yourself with a tasty beverage and then go out to the paintball range and use the rest of it.
Or vice versa. Shoot people and then take home and have a tasty beverage. Now, the other thing to know about this is there are a couple of different kinds that you'll find on eBay. There's a few things that you should probably check beforehand.
Do you need to, like, torque it down so you don't worry about it?
Go to the side view again, and I'll show you. Notice how one has sort of a hole in the front, at the top of the cylinder. You're going to want the ones that are adjustable. This has a little Allen wrench that I can put in there, and I can change how high this is. Notice how this one's pushed all the way in?
Right.
And this one was a non-adjustable type. It's very hard to make this thing work properly.
Okay.
This I can adjust just so that it releases the right amount of gas. This is so hard to get working.
Oh, okay.
And the reason for that is because this was a $6 part,
And I'm like, oh, that should be fine. No.
It released too much or too little?
Actually, it doesn't really work on this this version. So get the one that has the adjustable knob, the adjustable release mechanism, and you'll be much happier. And that's going to cost twice as much, but either you have one that works or one that doesn't.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So the way that this does work, you hold that canister. This just screws into the back. You remove this part because this part is designed to use with this cylinder. It fits in exactly. So I get myself a little extra space. Just screw this right in, like so. Oops.
A little cross thread there.
Yeah, a little cross threading. We should avoid doing that because that's a little bad.
Okay.
Close this back up. Let's put our semi-carbonated, water
carbonated
back on here
at all right now.
Like so. And now I can carbonate to my heart's content. Wah-ha-ha-ha. What, Brian?
Nice.
Look at the bubbles. The bubbles call for you. Let's see if I can get it overpressurized and make that sound I like so much. Okay, see that? When you hear that, it means stop.
That was a very comical sound.
But that's just the release valve. It's now overpressurized. There is a few things that I should mention about this, because people have been thinking about this for the longest time. Mm-hmm. Again, if you're going to buy from eBay, look at the recommendations and look at the reviews, because there are some really nasty parts out there. Because this has become so popular,
right?
There are people selling really not well machined
parts. And
yeah, in fact, I've heard reports of a couple of people buying adapters that weren't quite threaded right, and they'll destroy the threading on your SodaStream.
My concern would be like exploding or something.
Exploding, yeah, that would also be bad. I haven't had that much trouble with that.
Yeah.
But the other thing to remember is that not all CO2 is the same. Some of these stores will actually add lubricant into the CO2.
Oh.
Because that works better with your airsoft guns, right? Because you want it to lubricate the parts. You don't really want to drink that.
No. So
when you ask them if they have food quality CO2. And again, a lot of them do, because a lot of them don't have any sort of, what do they call that, a condenser, whatever, a CO2 condenser there. They're not making their own CO2. They buy big canisters of CO2, and then they equalize with your canister.
Okay.
Most of those will have food quality, but just ask. Just make sure, because...
Ugh, God, that would be bad. Yeah, putting lubricant in your soda. This one tastes a little oily.
Goes down smooth, though.
Yeah, way too smooth.
Way smooth. And what I really like about this approach is it's crazy, crazy cheap when you compare it. I mean, so the official carbonator is $37. Two of them are going to cost $66.98. One of...
Should I try some? Is this food quality?
Let's find out.
Yeah.
That's just fizzy water. I can't believe he drank that.
No, so, it's totally fine. It tastes great.
Water.
This is what I like, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Just fizzy water?
Just fizzy water sometimes.
I have something in it. Give me some cherry juice or something.
Nah, I'm okay without the syrup. I find this refreshing. Put like a lemon wedge or a lime in there. You're good to go.
All right. All kinds to all folks. But also, you buy the second bottle, you will be saving it. Because I paid something like... $20 to buy two of these canisters, and then you add the $5 refills, and buy the second canister, I'm already making off. And after that, it's just
like a $15 adapter.
Yeah, exactly. One other issue is this. So make sure when you buy off of eBay, because you're probably going to buy it off of eBay, go to the side view again. There's a little DOT stamp, the Department of Transportation. It says how long the tank is certified for. So this tank is certified until 2020.
Okay.
So it was good for like 3 years. Pay for the one with the further certification, because when they do refill, they are going to check that stamp, and if it's expired, they won't refill it anymore.
That makes sense.
And you'll find a lot of cheapies on eBay that expire in 2017. Don't do that. Pay the little extra. Get yourself a quality tank.
A structurally sound tank.
Right. Yeah. So... if you do have a SodaStream, and if you want to stop paying ridiculous amounts of money for carbon dioxide, get yourself a couple of these. Get yourself an adapter, a decent adapter, again, all on eBay, and make sure you're getting yourself food quality CO2, and you've got yourself a cheap way to keep yourself in fizz.
Yeah, no, I like it a lot. I think I might get one of these.
Yeah, actually, you know what? I think I have an extra one.
Ooh.
By extra, I mean it's broken right now.
Did you get one of those cheap eBay adapters or something? Threaded it? Or did you blow it up?
I may have overpressurized it.
Overpressurized?
I was doing another thing where I was attaching it to a big tank.
Like a propane-sized tank or something?
No, like a balloon. Helium balloon-sized tank. Really big tank.
And it...
Wow. Yeah. So it has a leak, but I use duct tape, so I'm pretty sure it's, like, solid.
Duct tape fixes everything.
It does. folks, when we come back, we're going to be continuing with our Cooking for Geeks. We gave you a really simple one, one that's a tip for anyone who likes the bubbly. But when we come back, we're going to show you an interview I did with a man who knows all about Cooking for Geeks. And then we're going to give you a quick preview of some toys that we're going to be bringing up in coming weeks.
Sweet.
To help you with your foodie addiction. But before we do that, you know what I want to do, Brian?
What's that?
I want to help the people out there who need the knowledge, the way to get their server, their blog, their website, their portfolio, their next great app onto the internet.
Up and running without a hitch.
Without having to hire out an expensive maintenance person to take care of your hardware, without having to get a colo to house your gear, without getting an ISP agreement along with a financial agreement from a transaction processor to make sure it all runs smoothly. Instead of doing all that, how about I give them a way to get everything up and running on the internet in as little as 55 seconds?
Please do, because the thought of all those other things was giving me a headache.
Well, now that I've teased it enough, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about DigitalOcean. Now, DigitalOcean is a different kind of provider. They use droplets, which are containers, a way to take your Minecraft server, your WordPress blog, whatever it might be, and put it onto DigitalOcean system. Now, the wonderful way that that works is you can have it as small or as large as it needs to be. It's scalable. I could start by opening up a service for just a couple of hours for a couple of friends to test to see if my programming was working properly, or I could open up my Minecraft server for a couple of days, taking up hundreds, thousands of CPUs and tons of storage space if I need it. It's really just a click and away. Now, DigitalOcean is used by over 600,000 developers, including Twit's Randall Schwartz, Aaron Newcomb, and of course, me. DigitalOcean lets you deploy and configure your droplets via a streamlined control panel or a simple API. You get to choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and FreeBSD. You can also select from one of the many pre-configured one-click builds with Drupal, Docker, or Node.js. It lets you get up and running quickly, or you can customize it to get exactly the infrastructure that you need. Everything's running 100% SSDs and state-of-the-art data centers around the world, which means it's highly scalable. I can have it just as a local instance, or I can push it out around the world, again, with just a click of a button. You could use advanced features like floating IPs if you need high availability, private networking, and automated deployments via an API. They've also got an extremely active community, which I think is important, because when you have an active community, it means that you're creating a product, a service that people actually like, that people want to help the newbies with. That's exactly what DigitalOcean is. It's not just a company that's selling you service, it's a community. It's so easy to get started, you could be up and running with your SSD cloud server in as little as 55 seconds. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to try DigitalOcean. DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing with their servers starting at just $5 per month. There's also hourly pricing available starting at less than a penny per hour. But we're going to make it so that you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. That's right. Nothing. Gratis. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code KNOWHOW for a free $10 credit. That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do for you. Again, that's DigitalOcean.com. DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code KNOWHOW in the billing section to get your $10 credit for free. It's DigitalOcean, a better way to be on the net. And we thank DigitalOcean for their support of KNOWHOW. Hey, Brian.
What's up?
You think you have what it takes to be a digital foodie?
Does it take much to do that?
I know, it sounds kind of painful.
It does a little, yeah.
Well, before we get into the pain, hey, Alex, why don't you go ahead and press that magic button?
We are here with Jeff Potter from Cooking for Geeks. He is the author of a book for people who want to know why science, engineering, and cooking go hand in hand. Jeff, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, this is an interesting topic. It's an interesting crossover. Our audience, obviously, is very tech-oriented. They're very science-oriented. But you make the leap, the jump. You say, look, if you are a minded person for engineering and for science, you should have the same mind for cooking.
Absolutely. What happens in the kitchen is, well, my background is actually computer science, okay. Right?
Yes.
So, you know, computer science is, as most of the sciences are, about figuring out how something works and building a model in your head that says, hey, this thing works this way. You know, if I do this, then this will happen. And the same thing is true in the kitchen. If you understand how things work and why they work, when you walk into a kitchen, you can have something come out the way you want it to.
Now, that sounds like something that should be elementary. I mean, yeah, it totally makes sense. A recipe for cooking is the same thing as the procedures for coding or the instructions I follow when I'm building something or a procedure I might have as a chemist for making certain chemical changes. But we don't naturally make that. I mean, I know a lot of geeks whose idea of good food is a hot pocket that's not too hot.
So there's a magic force field around the kitchen that turns people's rational normal thinking process off and switches on the, I must exactly follow this recipe, step one, step two, step three. And so much of this book is about getting people to go, wait, no, you don't have to follow a recipe. Understand why it's working this way. Go in and like, don't just have a hot pocket for dinner or pizza or whatever. Like, figure out how to make a really awesome pizza or figure out how to make your own hot pocket without like just grabbing one from the freezer section and like hack it, tweak it, play with it, figure out how to adapt it. Like, why does it work? How can you make it more delicious?
I think that's the part that's off-putting. Because for a person who is scientific, to always hear that cooking is an art, that for me, that kind of pulls me away. I'm thinking, well, I'm not artistically minded. I have no creative side that tells me what I should try, what different ingredients. And so I look at cooking as, no, that's for creative people. That's not for science people.
It's both an art and a science. And the exciting part is to delve into the science. I mean, so how much coding do you do? How much software do you get into? How much tech stuff do you get into? And like, there's art and there's science in creating software. So there's art and there's science in creating food. So, you know, you dig into the science of the food bit and then like the art will come later. But you have to figure out how to actually get, you know, the science part of it down so you can go in and begin to experiment. I mean, if you're going to start with technology and you don't know how to actually write basic code, it's really hard to actually come up and write like some new amazing app or something. But, you know, you get that base level figured out and then, hey, suddenly you can start experimenting. So there's not that much in the food stuff that you need to start with. But a few kind of basic things and you can go off and start experimenting and having tons of fun, actually.
All right, let's get into the science, because our folks like to get their hands dirty, and maybe hopefully we've piqued their interest.
Literally dirty.
They're literally dirty, and they're thinking, okay, I can do this. You did a segment with SciFry on eggs, and it was eye-opening for me. It's what made me and my producer want to interview you, because it really is material science. Can you tell us a little bit about the science of a perfectly cooked, peelable egg?
Oh, Lordy, I think one can probably teach an entire course just on eggs alone. So let me ask, do you like to cook?
Yes.
Do you cook eggs?
I do.
How do you cook your eggs?
Typically, easy over.
Easy over. Okay, so what's happening when you crack that egg into the pan, you heat it up, at some point you flip it over and you put it on the plate? Like, what's actually happening to that egg in that process?
Well, I know that the whites will actually turn white. They'll harden as I apply more heat. So it goes from a gelatinous goop to something that's a bit firmer, and if I do it right, the yolk will stay mostly liquid. So that's about as far as my material science goes with eggs.
So this is kind of the magic model in my head. The magic model is what happens when you put cookie dough into the oven, like it magically turns into a cookie. What happens when you crack an egg into a pan is it magically turns white and kind of gets thicker. But that's the model that we talk about in the food world and kind of general society without getting into the science. But the better model here is to say, hey, that egg's got a bunch of proteins and fats in it. And when you heat those proteins up, they denature. They go from a native state that's all coiled up and kind of, well, you described it as, I think, gloppy and gelatinous.
Gloppy, yes.
Yeah, gloppy, right?
That's, I mean, ingredients.
And you said it turns white and becomes, and hardens. It actually doesn't harden. It just changes kind of from being one gel state to a tighter gel state that's, you know, still flexible, but, you know, changes in some aspects with the rate, with respect to like how those proteins are actually structured. But like the actual thing that's happening there is as you heat those proteins up, they begin to denature. And an egg, your chicken egg, has a couple dozen different proteins, and those different proteins denature at different rates and at different temperatures.
Oh, okay.
So what you've got is you've got a couple dozen different proteins, and they start to go, say, 140 degrees up to, say, 170 degrees. Hand-waving numbers here, easier to remember. Different proteins set and begin to denature in that egg when you crack it in there. So your over-easy egg is about getting some of those proteins to harden, to use the word that you liked, and then to keep some of the other ones, a lot of the ones in the yolk, actually, from actually denaturing and turning hard like a hard-cooked egg would have them. So that egg that you crack into that pan, it's really about the temperature that you're getting the egg itself up to. And how you heat that egg doesn't matter, although frying pan with some butter is probably the more delicious way. So yeah, there's a lot of different things you can like tease out there. But the real thing is like, hey, now you've got this model that says, hey, proteins denature at certain temperatures, you get those proteins up to that temperature, and how you do it doesn't really matter. And you're going to get a change in the texture based on those different things. So next time you go to cook an egg, you can think about, hey, what temperature do I need to hit? Somewhere in the 140 to 160 degree range, a little bit hotter, more of those proteins will denature, a little bit colder, you'll be a little bit runnier. And now you can like play with all the different variables. Like, how can I heat this?
I don't think I'll ever look at an egg the same way now. And that actually does make sense. I mean, there is some sort of chemical process that is taking place when I'm adding heat to the ingredients in my omelet. And it completely makes sense when you're saying, look, there's something's happening to the proteins. And if you understand what will happen to the different proteins at different temperatures, you can get really creative. Now yes. It's not just sunny side up, boiled, or scrambled. You can say, hey, you know what? I wonder if I could just affect these proteins. How would I do that? That's the science coming into the cooking.
That's the science. And there are folks, there's a great food scientist in the UK, Cesar Vegas, who's done all the calculations for all the proteins specifically. He's got a website. You can go literally dial in what texture you want your yolk and your white to be. You can actually cook an egg so the white and the yolk are both kind of plastic like mayonnaise if you get them to exactly the right time and the right temperature. I mean, like, you can go so far down the rabbit hole that it's like, okay, now we're just getting super geeky and going to say, okay, can I simulate the protein denaturation and the rates and, you know, come up with like a calculator for exactly what texture you want?
Right.
Totally
right.
Doable.
All right, let's move away from eggs because there is one other thing that I've heard that you were a part of. Cooking a 500-pound donut.
Guilty as charged.
Okay. Now, obviously, and our audience is savvy enough to know that cooking a 500-pound donut isn't the same as cooking a tiny little donut whole.
No.
There's a lot of science that goes into it. What happens when you scale up something like that?
Well, you get into really tough problems because heat transferring through something like donut batter, again, it's that model that we think of, oh, we heat it up and it magically turns to a cooked donut. No, it doesn't. As you heat something like donut batter up, it begins to set. And the rate of heat transfer through the batter actually changes as it changes into cooked donut. So you got little air pockets in there from
carbon
dioxide.
It insulates itself.
Yeah, it insulates, exactly. Yeah. So what happens if you need to get heat to the middle of something when it's now covered in 5 inches, 6 inches, 8 inches of insulated donut? I mean, it sounds crazy, but you get this problem where it's like, okay, I've got this 6 foot, you know, I have a 6 foot diameter torus with a wall that's like, you know, 2 feet at that point, if you're going for a nice Homer Simpson style donut. And like, that's just a tough material science challenge. I phoned in a couple of favors to figure out just like the heat rate transfers through that material. It turns out to be like literally college level, you know, quasi PhD level. Okay, so you've got a torus made of this material with this kind of heat transfer, and you're putting a million BTU of heat into it from burners on the bottom, and it's on top of a dumpster that's been sandblasted and then welded shut. I mean, it's stainless steel. Yeah, that's like the same thing as a wok. It's the same material, even though it's a dumpster. It's metal. Okay, that makes sense, you know? There's some tough science in there.
That's all pretty high-level thermodynamics.
It was actually above my pay grade.
Oh, wow.
I had to phone that one into some friends because, I mean, right. There's no textbook for this.
Yeah. Of course, people want to check out Cooking for Geeks. I mean, this is the source. If you want to start experimenting with food the same way you experiment with your maker, your DIY stuff, you're definitely going to want to pick this up. But I want you to leave our audience with some words of wisdom. If they are a geek and they're tired of microwave food and they're tired of just really basic stuff that they can cook and they're looking to get in to doing something a bit more creative, what bit of advice could you give them? What wisdom would you like them to walk away from this interview with to say, hey, you know what? I can do this.
I would say there's probably really two or three key things to understand in cooking. One, it's the temperature of the food itself that matters. If you put it into a really hot oven versus a kind of medium oven, the reactions in that food are based on the temperature that the food itself is at. So don't think about the temperature of the environment. Think about the temperature of the food. That's really important. The second is things like weight and temperature are easy to measure. Measure them. Use a good probe thermometer. Use a digital weight scale. Don't bake using measuring cups. Bake using a gram scale. If you've got an oven that you think's at 350, get a probe thermometer. Like when I cook fish, if I get some salmon and I cook it, I stick a probe thermometer into it and I set it to beep at 130 degrees. It's like a 2 or 3 foot long cable snakes out of the oven. Got a little device that goes beep, 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 beep when it hits 130. And like my salmon's done then. Like time is a proxy for temperature. So think about what you're measuring and measure it.
That's absolutely fantastic. Thank you so very much for sharing this with us. We've been speaking with Jeff Potter. He is the author of Cooking for Geeks. If you've ever wanted to do some delicious, delicious science, this is the book to get. Jeff, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
I'm Father Robert Ballister, and now that you know how, go cook it.
See, that was for new screensavers, but I...
But
I
you
was,
ended it right.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. That was my way of...
of actually tossing back to ourselves.
That's how we did it.
It was perfect.
Actually, it was a lot of fun. I did get his book, and I've been playing around with this. I did have two things that I had created, two experiments that we were going to use for this episode, and unfortunately...
What happened?
Physical services came over, and they cleared out my workroom.
Oh, that's right.
There was a miscommunication.
Mm-hmm. Because you were gone for really a little while. Yeah. Was somebody playing a prank on you? Is that what happened?
I hope that's not what it was. But I mean, when I got home... Because I got home late.
Yeah.
And I was ready to go to bed, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. The show is gone.
Where is it? Where is it?
Thankfully, I did have enough content elsewhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whew.
So we're going to be taking a look at more and more of those experiments because that's really what they are. Jeff was right. When you think about what goes on in the kitchen, it's just consideration of temperature and, you know, what ingredients you add, what kind of texture you want to create, what kind of chemical reactions you want to foster.
Right.
And I think that can speak to the geek inside of all of us.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm always willing to be a taste tester, so especially after all that talk about turkey...
Oh, we will be talking about that, Brian. I'm glad you brought it up. But first, let's go ahead and thank the sponsor of this episode of Know How, and it's Casper. Speaking of food, after I eat a lot of food, you know what I want to do?
Take a nap.
I want to take a nap, and I don't want to take a nap on just any old busted mattress. I want one that actually conforms to my body. I want one that uses science and technology to give me the best sleep possible. Because, I mean, we spend up to 80% of our day in bed.
Is that a true fact? It
probably.
Because I think for me it's like 90.
It could totally be. Wait, well, I would like to. No, but we do spend a lot of our lives in bed. And it's so strange when I think about how most people choose their bed. What do you do? You go to a mattress store, right?
Yeah.
You spend, what, 30 seconds on a mattress? And then you say, this is the one?
Yeah, you hop on it and you lay down until you feel uncomfortable because everyone's like, are you going to get up?
Yeah, I strip off my clothes. I get under the covers.
Right. You really want the full experience.
We were joking about this, but I mean, isn't that how you should choose your mattress?
Absolutely. You should at least spend a night on it.
Spend a night and actually see how you wake up. I mean, that's the proof, right? If you wake up and you're sore and your body doesn't like it, that's not the mattress for you.
Right.
If, however, it's exactly where you want it to be in the right environment and you find yourself getting the best sleep possible, well, that's the mattress for you. And that's what Casper wants you to try because they're not like those other mattresses. They don't have a showroom. They don't want you to choose in 30 seconds about whether or not you're going to put down a considerable investment into their product. They will actually ship it to your house so that you can try it and decide if Casper is right for you. Now, Casper is the mattress that Leo Laporte uses at home. Now, if he will sleep on it, and he is the king of geeks, don't you think it might be tempting for you? Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost on those that you would get at the showroom. And again, they're revolutionizing that industry by letting you take it home, by letting you try it where you actually sleep, in your house, with all the sights and the sounds and the smells of your daily night's sleep. A Casper mattress is obsessively engineered, again, at a fair price. They provide long-lasting comfort and support by combining different technologies, including that firm support layer, and the thermotop, so that you get that nice flow of air around your body as well as either a firm or a softer support. You can try sleeping on a Casper mattress, and that importance is meted out by their 100-day return period. After 100 days, that's when you make the decision on whether or not this is the mattress for you. And did you know that statistically lying on a bed in a showroom has no correlation whatever to whether or not it's the right bed for you? All Casper mattresses are made in the USA, and if you like their bed, you gotta try out the new Casper pillows. They have a responsive dual-layer pillow that adapts to your movements throughout the night. Folks, you spend so much time sleeping, and so much of your day is transformed by whether or not you got a good night's sleep. Don't you think it's time you pampered yourself just a little bit? Get a Casper mattress today. $500 for a twin or $950 for a king size. Compared to industry averages, that's an outstanding price. And you can save an additional $50 as one of our audience members by going to casper.com/knowhow. That's casper.com/knowhow. And enter the code knowhow. Again, that's casper.com/knowhow with promo code knowhow. Terms and conditions apply. For details, visit casper.com/terms. A better night's sleep awaits. And we thank Casper for their support of Know-How. Hey, Brian.
What's up?
Let's go ahead and talk a little bit about what we can expect on future episodes of the Cooking for Geeks.
Okay. I see you have some display items out here.
I got some tech. This is one of the first ones that I wanted. Because remember, we go for the low-hanging fruit. That's why we did the soda stream first.
Right.
It's easy to do. Yep. You just buy a couple of parts and you're ready to go, right? Well, one of the other things that we should consider is what we do with our food after we're done cooking it. Mm-hmm. A lot of us, we just dump it into like a Tupperware box, we put it in the refrigerator, and then it spoils and we throw it away.
That's what happens to me about 90% of the time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Stop doing that. One of the ways that we have to prevent that from happening is using a vacuum container. Because if you use a vacuum container, it removes the air or most of the air from the surrounding of the food. And it doesn't spoil as quickly. It stays fresh longer, and the flavor actually stays inside of it. I mean, I know it sounds like an advertising right now, but that's how it works.
I mean, I'm totally up for trying that. I mean, I've never seen an actual container that you can then use as a vacuum. I've always ever seen the plastic bags that you hook up to something, and it sucks the air out.
And those do work, but they are kind of cumbersome, and it means you have to break out the vacuum. And
that's not going to happen. No.
That's why I asked this company to send me this. This is the Ancom Savior. And the way that it works is it's just a like a mason jar. So you put your food in here or whatever it is that you need to preserve.
Right.
You do this, put this back on, and you just crank this handle. Now, it doesn't require an electric vacuum. It's actually creating a vacuum, and it's getting harder to turn. Okay, that's...
Wow.
And if you look at the side here, let's go ahead and look at the side view. That little button, that when like it the... gets like that, it means that the vacuum is right. So let me... Watch. Let me release it. And you'll notice that's pumped out. So as I turn this...
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And that will tell me that that I am vacuum sealed. Now, they have both 1.5 and 2.5 quart versions of this. I actually have the 2.5 testing right now. I've put my favorite thing to put in here are things like fruits and vegetables.
That's always the first thing that goes bad. When we go to the grocery store, we get like salad or we'll get like, not bananas, but like we'll get fruits and stuff. And then it's like, if we don't have them in the first couple of days, they get bad fast.
Yeah, no. And we're always so tempted to buy in larger quantities because it feels easier, right? And then it goes bad. Now, meat will last about 3 times longer. I've already tried that out. That's fine. So
true.
Steak will last 3 times longer in the fridge. It will taste fresher if I vacuum sealed it, because essentially it oxidizes if I don't take care of it. Cheeses will last about twice as long. I'm not a big fan of using this for cheese. Fruits and veggies will last about 4 times as long. It works really well on coffee. If you're a coffee aficionado, this is probably the best way to keep your beans.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because my mom used to keep hers in the freezer to try and keep them to last longer.
Which kind of works.
Yeah.
Not really. And remember, beans are typically vacuum packed. So when you cut that seal, you're allowing it to oxidize. You put it back into here, and it's like you're putting it back into the vacuum bag.
That's cool. I would totally be up for trying that.
It's also really good for if you do a lot of spices. And I've actually used like smaller containers so I can have all my spices in here. Like I actually could put about 16 different spices and have them all vacuum sealed. They last forever.
Nice.
I mean, spices already have a pretty long shelf life.
Right.
But if you do a lot of cooking, you'll know the difference between fresh spices and fresh herbs and kind of like dried out, nasty. It has the flavor, but not quite the savory quality you're looking for.
Yeah, no, what happened to us is we got this big spice rack, and there's like a few spices that we use all the time,
right?
and then there's a couple that we only
the lonely
use.
Lonely spices.
Yeah, occasionally, but then you realize by the time you get to those, sometimes they're like, they're dried out, they're not as good.
Right. Now, I do like the design on this. I will say these are a little bit expensive. You're looking at like $69 for this smaller one. You're looking at what, $75? Like $74.99 for the larger one, for the 2.5 quart version. You can find products like this for like half the price.
But I've tried those, and I stopped using them because the vacuum mechanism always seems to break.
I was going to say, these feel pretty solid. And then is it modular? Like, if you had to replace the vacuum system,
oh, yeah,
you take them out?
Yeah, so these are all modular. So, once I release it, this part you don't wash.
Okay.
But this is dishwasher safe.
Makes sense.
But, after time, this starts to get cloudy, so you can just buy another one of these
and
put the vacuum device back on top.
Okay. They feel pretty sturdy.
They do. I want to try this out because a device like this always looks good at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Give me, 3 months of daily usage,
right,
and I'll tell you. And I know it works, so I know the system works. But what I need to know is it going
to
last?
If this breaks
in 3 months, then it may be not so
much. Yeah, what's the durability like? But now I'd be curious to see if you do maybe cheese in this one and then cheese in just a regular Tupperware container and then let it do it a long time lapse and just see if the mold grows and stuff.
Is this like the bacteria test?
Yeah, I'm thinking back to my ear again.
Yeah. Actually, Web2102 in the chat room has a really good suggestion. If I put a marshmallow in here, as I add the vacuum, the marshmallow should start expanding.
We should have marshmallows should totally here in the studio.
Yeah. Well, that'll be fun.
Or put a peep in there. Beep, beep, beep.
And then microwave it.
And then microwave it. Really destroy it. No, that's cool. Is there any chance of over-tightening?
It gets harder and harder. So as you get more of a seal, it just doesn't want to turn anymore.
Yeah, you can tell at the top too that it's super just vacuumed.
Now if you turn and all of a sudden it gets really easy to turn, you probably broke something.
Okay. So yeah, probably wouldn't want to do that.
Don't do that. That's all right, let's go ahead and move from vacuum sealing to stuff that will actually help us to make food.
Like cook stuff. Okay.
So I was thinking, let's take a look at this first.
What is this?
I've actually been playing with one of these at my home. This is from Roseville. This is a bread cooker.
Oh, a loaf maker.
It is a loaf maker. Yes, as you said. This one actually has this. I kind of like this. I like bread with fruit and nuts in it. I love raisin bread. But you can't just toss that in there and then put it all into the bread maker. It actually comes at a different part of the cooking.
Oh, okay. So it's like a timed process.
Precisely. So this actually allows you to add fruit or nuts, and then it will automatically add them in.
That's cool.
This is actually pretty cool because it has a 13-hour timer. So I've done things like set this as my alarm clock. You get that smell of cooked bread in the morning.
Wake up to fresh bread.
Awesome.
Oh, I like that.
Super bad for me. I'm not supposed to be
eating. There should be a little bacon attachment, though, too.
Just drop in the bacon. The other thing I really appreciate about this is it's ridiculously easy to clean. It's a little twist, and you can... So this is where the bread actually gets made. It's got a DC motor, so it's not really loud. It's actually a very quiet unit.
Huh.
And then that overhead... shot. That's the heating coil. So that actually bakes the bread,
and it keeps it even heat.
Correct. And then this mixes it. All you have to do is there's instructions that come in the book for making the bread that you want. All wheat, whatever.
I want to make banana bread.
You can do banana bread. Absolutely, do banana bread. And then you put it into this. It mixes it for you, and you're good to go. The other thing I like about this is there are pre-programmed digital types in here. So if I wanted it to make the regular bread, do I want to do French bread? Do I want to do gluten-free bread? There's all programs for that. So this treats them each a little bit differently.
Nice. Okay. So, it's got the little menu system here.
Yeah. Now, and another reason why I wanted to support this company, Roseville, is because they actually took on – it's Newegg. They took on a bunch of patent trolls. And any company that's willing to shell out money to do that, I think we should give them some exposure.
Yeah, that was a pretty good article about how they were one of the few companies that actually went out after.
Apple didn't do it. Yeah. Google didn't do it.
Robust Newegg was like, hey, patent or something like that.
Yeah, it was kind of ridiculous. And again, that 13-hour delay, my favorite part, and my parents love it, even though they refuse to eat the bread.
Yeah.
They love smelling it in the morning. There's something about that smell, right?
Well, I'm more than willing to have the bread. But, the smell, it's all about the smell.
Mm. So, this is the Roseville. This is the RHBM. I think they call it the 1501.
Huh.
It sells for something like, $70, $79?
Okay.
So for $80, you get yourself a nice little bread alarm clock.
Mm.
Not bad.
Bread alarm clock. That's how I want to wake up in the morning.
Now, something that is for those who... Well, actually, let's get this off the table. Even those who are not big fans of bread, I was super skeptical when they said, hey, you want to try this? I'm like, this sounds weird. But they said, do you like fried foods? I'm like, well, of course I like fried foods, but I'm not supposed
rhetorical
to eat them.
Rhetorical question, thank you.
But then they said, okay, well, what if we could send you a product that can make fried foods, but it uses no oil?
I'd say I'm intrigued.
I was intrigued, and I thought it was BS, and then I tried one of these, and it totally worked. So this is...
this little egg?
This is essentially a turbo broiler. If you've ever used a turbo broiler, this is the same thing. There is no oil in this. It uses hot air, so it's a convection oven. The idea is you have this. It's a little tray, and it has a basket that you can release. Push this button. So this is where you put anything that you actually want to cook.
Okay.
So it could be chicken, it could be steak, it could be fries.
Like potatoes.
Potatoes in this? French fries? Awesome!
Really?
They're so good, and there's no oil whatsoever. This is not for the oil. This is the collection of all the stuff.
Oh, if anything falls through.
Right, right. Okay. And then you just put this in here. It's got a little timer up front, and it's got a thermostat. It's that simple. So you set the time that you want, and you set the temperature that you want, and it goes.
Okay, I like this idea a lot better than the actual having oil. My parents used to have one of the ones where you do your own French fries, burned themselves so right? many times on that. Yeah.
Right? Actually, one of I've had turbo broilers in the past. My parents love turbo broilers, but they have like the old version where they have like the fan is this thing you take off and everything gets ridiculously messy.
Yeah.
This was surprisingly clean. The only part that gets dirty. Is like
just
this.
Pan. It looks pretty easy to wash out.
Yeah, this is actually dishwasher safe.
How come you didn't? We should have started the episode, and then by the time we got to this point, we could have had French fries.
They actually sent me two of these because I said I wanted one to demo on the show, and then one to actually
to have in the studio.
Yeah. So this is the one to have in the studio. We'll be able to make ourselves everything from steak to chicken to fries,
chicken nuggets, fish sticks, shrimp. A hamburger, though.
Hamburgers.
Yeah, it has a picture of a full hamburger, though.
Hamburgers are really good on this.
Well, like, you put the meat in?
You put the meat. I don't put the whole hamburger.
Yeah, I was like, that would be strange.
Yeah. Well, but 1,400 watts, between 170 to 400 degrees temperature for the air that it circulates. And I got to say, I actually like this better than fried, partially because it doesn't require nearly as much effort as fried.
It doesn't seem like it takes very long for anything either.
No,
it's
no.
like 9 to 20 minutes for French fries.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing.
Or frozen fries.
It's really a put it and forget it. So
cool.
you know how long it takes for that particular type of food. Just go ahead and set the temperature, set the timer, and you'll hear a ding when it's done. And because there's no oil, there is no danger of burning yourself. It's not as unhealthy for you. I mean, you're still eating fatty foods, at least.
Yeah. But you're not
you're
not adding extra oil to it.
Right. So these are two of the products that we're going to be playing with. And we're actually going to be combining this with some of the formulas that Jeff Potter gave to us in his Cooking for Geeks book. So, again, we're using technology in an interesting way to help feed our minds and our bodies, Brian.
Mm-hmm. And I'm always happy about that.
Mm-hmm. Now, folks, if there is a food technology item that you want us to try, make sure to contact us. You know how to get a hold of us on our Twitter accounts. You know how to get us at padre@twit.tv, brian@twit.tv. Mm-hmm. You also know how to get a hold of us on Twitter. Let us know what you want to see. If you find a piece of food technology that you think might
somebody
be interesting.
Somebody suggest an ice cream maker.
I actually have something else planned for that.
Oh, okay.
Can you say liquid nitrogen ice cream?
I probably could.
I just did. Yeah. Also, let me mention that this entire next week, both Brian and I are going to be at the National Association of Broadcasters show in Las Vegas. For the first time for you.
Me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're going to be showing you some of the technologies that are coming out that might help young podcasters. And again, that's part of a different series that we're doing, sort of Podcasting 101. So for the next two shows, that's next Thursday and next Monday, it's all NAB. We're going to be back to it with some good old-fashioned DIY maker and foodie stuff.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I'm already hungry just thinking about it.
Yeah. If you want to know about any of the things that we took a look at, from our savior bottle to our bread and our oilless oil cooker, if you want to know where we went to buy the parts for our soda stream, you can find them in our show notes, which... where do we keep those things,
Brian? The good old place, twit.tv/KH, and... like Padre said, you'll find all our show notes, links to things that we talked about, and ways to subscribe. Also, you can download different versions of video and or audio. I don't know why you would want to do just audio of our show, but if you do audio, definitely download the video, too.
Do it. How about that? Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention. This is the Rosewild RHAF. This is their 15003.
And it goes for about $110.
Does it make a lot of noise when it's cooking?
No, you hear like a fan. It sounds like a fan on a computer.
Oh, okay. I'm basically used to that.
Yeah. In fact, I find that the timer, the little, that thing, that's more annoying than the fan.
Really?
Okay. I hate the sound of a timer. Yeah. Makes me think like, of tests.
Oh, stuff. Yeah. You buckle down.
Mm-hmm. Also, don't forget that you can find us in our Google Plus group.
Google
it's
Plus
a fantastic
group.
Place. If you are a experimenter, if you're an expert, if you're a novice, if you want to post pictures of your project, if you want to ask questions about a project you're thinking about, mm-hmm. if you have a project that you think we should do here on the show, that's where you have to be. It's almost 10,000 members strong. And where do they find it, Brian?
Well, I can't remember the link off the top of my head. Where is it? It's like G...
I think it's like a...
There it is. Yeah. It is gplus.to/twit, TWITKH.
Yeah.
Or you, if you're already on Google Plus, just search for the know-how community and it'll pop right up.
Yeah. And of course, we also mentioned that you can find us on Twitter. You can find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ.
And you can find me at @cranky_hippo.
And you can find our director, John, at twitter.com/ANELF3. That's an L3.
Actually, funny story about John.
Yeah.
We were at breakfast earlier today, and the waitress thought that we were related, and she called us Brunkle. What was the last name she came up with?
I don't remember.
It was like a combination of Burnett and Gumple. It was like Brumple.
I think that works well
for us. The Brumple brothers.
Yeah, John Brumple is a good guy.
Yeah, totally.
He always keeps us on time. Yeah. Folks, until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballister.
I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how,
go cook it.
No.